Thanks for tuning in for the May 26th podcast. I'm Jeff Ratliff, Deputy Section Editor of the Neurology Podcast. This week's featured interview showcases a talk on a new insomnia treatment in elderly patients. For this week's What's Trending segment, we pick up again with Jason Krall's interview of Nancy Wexler about her life's work on Huntington's disease. If you haven't heard the first part of that interview, I want to encourage you to check out last week's episode before doing that. Please remember, we offer free CME to AAN members for each eligible podcast, and we welcome your feedback at podcast@aan.com. Welcome to this week's featured article interview. I'm Jeff Ratliff from Jefferson University. In this week's interview, I'm talking with Yves Dauvillier from Université Montpellier in France about his study in this week's issue of the Green Journal Neurology titled Daridorexant, a New Dual Orexin Receptor Antagonist in Elderly Subjects with Insomnia Disorder. This was a randomized placebo-controlled trial of a new dual orexin receptor antagonist to treat insomnia in elderly patients. We wanted to bring Yves on the podcast to discuss this new agent and the results of his trial to see how it may change the treatment landscape going forward. Welcome to the podcast, Yves. Help me set the stage for background for this study. My impression is that insomnia is a common problem among my elderly patients, which is compounded by my apprehension about prescribing sleep aids due to reticence, due to side effects. Can you tell us about why new compounds and drugs are needed to treat insomnia in our elderly patients?
Yes, for sure. As you know, insomnia is very severe and a highly prevalent condition in elderly, and severe insomnia at risk for cognition, cognitive decline, cardiovascular problem, falls, and bad quality of life. So in most of patients, you can manage the patient with sleep hygiene, and if you are able to do so, some more structured cognitive behavioral therapy. But for severe patients, medication are most of the time required. And right now, there is no current drugs available that treat correctly on the long-term patient without too much side effect. So there is clearly a room to have new drugs with better benefit-risk ratio on the long-term, especially in elderly subjects with some comorbidities that may really impact the sleep and especially insomnia on the quality of life.
This drug is an orexin antagonist. When we think of sleep aids, I tend to think of benzodiazepines or other GABA enhancers, antihistamines, melatonin, and various antidepressants. Obviously, all of these drugs have their associations with adverse side effects in all patients. We may recall from our training that orexin plays a role in the pathophysiology of sleep disorders, specifically narcolepsy. Your compound would not be the first orexin antagonist available, and there are currently medications targeting this receptor on the market for insomnia. Can you briefly give us a refresher on orexin and why it makes a good target for drug development when it comes to managing insomnia?
Orexin is a wake-potent peptide with deficiency leading to narcolepsy type 1, so narcolepsy with cataplexy. So to antagonize this system is a key target to treat insomnia for sure. There are several drugs available in this field, especially in the US, not yet in Europe. So this new selective dual orexin target is of interest for several reasons. One is the different pharmacokinetics and pharmacodynamics compared to those that has been already reported on the market and with nice half-life and Tmax and so on. So there is key interest to have this kind of new drug that target new orexin pathway to really be more effective in managing sleep onset insomnia and sleep maintenance insomnia without too much side effect during the day and without too much drowsiness, fatigue, sometimes burden side effect related to what we use so far, mostly benzos, Z drugs, or low dose of antidepressants.
And so in this study, it was a randomized, double-blind, placebo-controlled phase 2 study of daridorexant in patients over 65. You looked at 4 active drug doses as well as placebo arm and monitored both scores of wakefulness after sleep onset as well as latency to persistent sleep. What did you learn about this compound about treating insomnia and its efficacy in that realm?
So this study proved the dose effect of this new DORA called daridorexant to treat sleep onset and sleep maintenance insomnia in elderly subjects. Sleep onset insomnia is mostly for young adults, and sleep maintenance insomnia is mostly for elderly subjects. And with this drug, we confirm with this study that both sleep latency and sleep maintenance defined in the polysomnography assessment in decreasing sleep latency to sleep and improving wake time after sleep onset. So this very short trial, because it's just two consecutive days of exposure to the drugs, confirm what has been already reported in adults, not elderly adults, but adults, on similar endpoints. Sleep latency and wake time after sleep onset on polysomnographies has been reported a few months ago in another journal. So I think this is a key study confirming what we do know already in adults and now in elderly subjects, the more at-risk population, because of increasing risk of insomnia per se, but also the consequences of having insomnia.
And that sounds important. And when we talk about insomnia, we talk about difficulty initiating sleep and difficulty maintaining sleep. And it sounds like the outcomes with this new compound were promising in both of those realms, which is exciting. What were the adverse effects or side effects that you discovered that may sort of limit our use of this medication going forward?
So that's a good question. And hopefully, we didn't find too much side effect in this study. It's just 7% using the drug compared to 5% using the placebo. And the side effects are fatigue, headache, and mostly just headache with the dose response effect. So the 50 milligram dose leads to more fatigue. But for the other rare side effect, there is no key relationship with the dose. So it's very good safety compounds in this specific elderly population. And what we were interesting for sure based on the target is orexin deficiency related to daytime sleepiness and or other narcolepsy symptoms. And we find nothing. So there is no inducing narcolepsy symptoms using these drugs. And of key interest, we find that the performance during the day improve in contrast to potential side effect that we may have in mind at the beginning, to have some drowsiness, fatigue during the day. In contrast, we do see some improving performance on the next day. So I think there's a few side effects, but again, a tendency to improve nighttime sleep, but also daytime performance during the day. So the improving in 24 hours a day.
And acknowledging that this drug is still in development, is not available yet, I want to switch gears a little bit and just take advantage of your expertise in insomnia management and hope you can talk a little bit with us about your current approach to insomnia in elderly patients in your practice. So let's assume that your counseling on sleep hygiene has failed, hasn't worked well. You talked a little bit about some other behavioral therapies that can be tried. How do you counsel patients and what treatments do you tend to reach for when you're trying to manage insomnia, particularly in an elderly population, which we know can be at higher risk of side effects?
Yes, for sure. This is a very important question about how to manage patients with insomnia. And the first point is to define with a good clinical interview the etiology of insomnia to exclude pain, restless leg, depression, anxiety, time in bed, etc., to treat that specifically. And if that persists, you need to go to sleep hygiene, really to increase physical activity, to increase the patient on the light exposure during the day, and to decrease at night the time spent in the bed. And if it's not enough, you can go to a more formal cognitive behavioral therapy, but unfortunately, in most of cases, it's not available, not reimbursed, and with not enough psychologists trained to do so. So for severe chronic insomniac patients, especially in elderly range, we need to use drugs. And the main drugs we use in France is Z drugs, or sometimes low dose of antidepressants such as SSRI, and sometimes also some benzo. We cannot right now use the DORA, so the dual orexin receptor antagonist, because it's not available in Europe. So we are waiting for this kind of drug, and especially doridorexant, because the results of this study and the previous one in adults with a good half-life and good Tmax and good benefits-risk ratio that need to be confirmed. But we are waiting for DORA in Europe.
And so given that current status of treatment plans for insomnia in the elderly, particularly where you are in France, what's next? Do you see orexin antagonists being the next area of development? Are there other promising targets that drug developers are looking at?
I think we need first to define the best target with better efficacy and safety on the long term. And I think orexin is one of them. And the interest in elderly subjects is especially of interest because of huge amount of comorbidities in elderly patients with insomnia. And one of them is the cognitive decline. There is a lot of recent exciting research on a relationship between slow wave sleep, the G lymphatic systems, and the clearance of some peptide accumulate in the wake state in the brain, such as the amyloid. So if you have good sleep at night, you can clear better your amyloid accumulate in the brain. And if you have poor sleep at night, you have too much amyloid in the brain. And if you are at risk because of genetic background, such as APOE4, you may be at risk to develop cognitive problem and disorder. And there is a huge relationship between amyloid and orexin. And with this kind of drugs, there is two aims. One is to improve sleep for sure, as the major complaint of the patient when he wants to see the sleep doctor for that. But the second point is also to improve comorbidity associated with insomnia. And I just mentioned one of them being cognitive decline. I think there is also other risk, cardiovascular risk, metabolic problem associated with bad sleep, poor sleep, insufficient sleep, and fragmented sleep, which is really frequent in elderly subjects. So I think this target is quite new for us because there is no drug yet available there. So it's a really promising way to antagonize the pathway with good benefits-risk ratio on the long term.
And I think those are all good points, that sleep is not happening in isolation, and we need to think about comorbidities, like you mentioned, amyloid pathology and abnormalities in orexin that may be indicative of cognitive impairment or other systemic diseases that are at play here. I wanted to thank you again for joining us. I think that was really helpful. I want to encourage our listeners to check out Eve's paper in the May 26th issue of Neurology. Again, the title is Daridorexant, a new dual orexin receptor antagonist in elderly subjects with insomnia disorder. Thanks again, Eve.
Hey, it's Jason Crowell with the Neurology Podcast, and for our second interview today, we have part two of my interview with Dr. Nancy Wexler. If you have not yet listened to part one, I encourage you to listen to that. It aired last week. Nancy Wexler is a neuropsychologist at Columbia University, but she's best known for her research in Huntington's disease. And we heard the story last week of how, after multiple family members, including her mother, were diagnosed with HD, she decided early in her career to look for the location of the HD gene. And so in the late 1970s, this took her to Venezuela, where she and her team would ultimately develop a pedigree of over 18,000 individuals spanning 10 generations and collecting blood samples from over 4,000. When we left off last week, Nancy was explaining to us their plan to use linkage analysis to find the location of the gene by developing these large pedigrees and studying large families to see which genetic markers traveled with affected individuals in those families. So next, I asked Nancy how we went from using genetic markers to learning the general location of the gene to learning the specific gene that was responsible for HD.
Well, we had a sequence, literally sequence, each base pair at a time, which took forever. We had to, you know, find other markers in between. You know, G8 was one marker. Another marker, you know, was closer. And so you had to keep, you know, literally find a marker and sequence it. But back then, you know, sequencing was, you know, very super slow going. And sequencing got faster, but it turns out that, you know, really we found it because of this giant expansion that people with Huntington's have. So as we're sequencing along, normal DNA, you know, lala, suddenly a whole expansion. And again, we found that we were able to identify the gene itself by having this gigantic expansion, mostly from the kids.
And so a pretty remarkable story that the expansion of the HD gene was really one of the things that led to its own discovery as they did the sequencing. Back on the July 22nd, 2019 podcast, we interviewed Sarah Tabrizi to discuss her research on oligonucleotide treatments for Huntington's disease, which have been shown to reduce the levels of the mutant Huntington protein in the spinal fluid. And obviously, we're all very excited about that. So with that in mind, I asked Nancy to talk a little bit about the future of HD and the potential for treatments for patients with HD.
Well, I'm very hopeful. I actually am hopeful that the test works, you know. I think it has, you know, good data that test works. Is it possible to, you know, have another treatment carving out the CAGs? You know, because you can CRISPR out the CAGs, you know. You can CRISPR them out. So I don't want to be lost in this stampede, you know, because I do think it is going to just make a huge difference in my life and other people's lives.
It's hard to talk with Nancy or read about her and not come away with just how much love she has for those families in Venezuela who have contributed to the research over the years. When I was preparing for our interview, I read an editorial she wrote in the New England Journal of Medicine, published June 13, 2019. It's titled Oligonucleotide Treatment for Huntington's Disease, discussing Sarah DeBrizzi's work. I'm going to read the last two sentences of that editorial. The ultimate challenge will be to bring safe, effective, and affordable treatment not only to patients in North America and Europe, but also to patients with Huntington's disease throughout the world. For those in Venezuela who donated the samples that made this promising approach possible, the treatment should be free. And so it's clear to me that in terms of potential disease-modifying treatments for patients with HD, we wouldn't be where we are without the generosity of those Venezuelan families to participate in Nancy's research, and then, of course, the work of Nancy and her colleagues to help find the location of the HD gene. And so as we wrapped up, I asked Nancy to talk just a little bit about what those families from Venezuela mean to her.
I thought, you know, everything we learned about Huntington's is really thanks to the Venezuelans and thanks to these families. You know, the first enzyme I went over there, I've grown most of them. Yeah. Unfortunately, I was never able to have kids of my own, although I tried nonstop. But they're all of my kids, my surrogate kids, my actual kids. I fell in love with them. And every single thing that I know or we do or we've learned is thanks to them. Because the woman used to get beaten up if they participated with their husband. And I said, well, why do you participate if your husband beat you up? He said, well, we believe in you. We believe in your research. And we believe that you are going to have, you know, cure, the answer to our children and our grandchildren. And, you know, I have all of these adopted children and grandchildren.
It was really a tremendous honor to talk with Nancy for our podcast and hear about her work as a scientist, but also her personal experience of living with Huntington's disease as a patient. So thank you, Nancy, for your time. And I also want to thank the Venezuelan families whose willingness to participate in Nancy's research have helped us get to where we are. I'd like to direct you to Nancy's website, hdfoundation.org, which is the Hereditary Disease Foundation website. First of all, if you want to hear more about Nancy and her story, she was actually recently featured in a two-night Ken Burns documentary called The Gene, An Intimate History, which aired on PBS back in April. And you can see Nancy's clips on the HD Foundation website. And then also, if you are interested in contributing to the HD Foundation and their work, you can do that on the website as well. I'd also like to say special thanks to Jeff Ratliff, deputy editor of the podcast, for helping me with this interview the last 2 weeks, and also Rima Murphy from our editing team for working on the interview both last week and this week. Thanks for tuning in to this week's Neurology Podcast, and we'll see you next week.
This is Jeff Ratliff. Please check out this week's journal, which features an article on liver transplantation as a rescue therapy for severe neurologic forms of Wilson's disease, and another article on intracranial hemodynamic relationships in patients with cerebral small vessel disease. Please take a look at these and other articles in this week's issue. Thank you again for listening and have a great week.
The views and opinions of the participants in this podcast do not necessarily reflect those of the journal Neurology or the AAN. Disclosures of the participants are included in the show descriptions, reached by a link on the neurology.org website.